dear people. Welcome back to For Real. I'm Kim Stewart, your compatriot in curiosity. And I'm so honored to introduce you to my guest today. Catherine James is an award-winning author of fiction and nonfiction. She is an extraordinary writer, a visual artist, just an insanely creative person. And I was floored by her book, A Prayer for Orion, A Son's Addiction and a Mother's Love. Addiction seems like one of those things that's hidden in plain sight, a reality, not just an idea, and something we are all hungry to put language around so we can figure out how to face it straight on with those we love. I loved learning from Catherine, and I'm so grateful she let us eavesdrop on her life and experience and wisdom. Here is my conversation with the bright and compassionate Catherine James. Catherine James, thank you for joining me on For Real. It is such a joy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so glad you asked me, Kimberly.
Well, you know, I loved your writing. And so I cold called after a mutual friend, our dear friend, Amy Hansen, connected us. And she texted me and said, you need to know this person. And so I'm so excited that she is always on the lookout for me. She's also given me my best recipes for like tomato soup and bread, but literature is where she really shines, and she did not disappoint. You are an extraordinary author, and I'm super,
thank you.
To talk to you. Okay, I would like to start by asking you about surprises. Here's what I mean. You are an exquisite word crafter. You have worked to refine that craft. You have an MFA from Columbia. You've taught there. You've won a bunch of prizes, both for your memoir, A Prayer for Orion. Is that what I would call that? Your memoir? One memoir.
Yep. That's a memoir.
And then you have a beautiful fiction book that I'm reading right now, a novel, and lots of prizes, lots of awards. And here's my question for you. As a writer and artist, by the way, you're a visual artist. You do all of the things. I'm wondering what surprises you about your current life. Did you see this coming? Were you the little girl who said to people, yes, I will be an artist, please watch me go? Or was that something in the making as you grew up?
Oh, good question. Well, you always hear these writers who say I was born with a pen in my hand. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I was actually that, obviously, a writer. However, I did do my little, you know, poetry, which, oh my goodness, cringe, but I still have a couple of them. So I started writing poetry and sketching, and, you know, I was a little bit of a spacey kid. So
I love it.
Kind of knew that that's the way I was going to go because I wasn't going to end up in med school. So
yeah. Not looking to be a CPA.
No.
And did your parents encourage that? For all the parents listening, were they alarmed? Did they want you to take the LSAT, or did they know? No, this is really her wiring. We want to blow oxygen on that.
Another excellent question. They were very encouraging, and that might be because I failed algebra, and they knew that that was going to be a dead end for me anyway. Yes, true story. I failed algebra.
That's awesome. See, kids, you can find the way that you are supposed to go. Algebra is optional.
Don't have to take that. Oh. Yes. So no, they were very encouraging. My grandmother was an artist. So yeah.
That's awesome.
Very encouraging.
Did that affect the way you raised your children?
It did. We have a very creative family. So they, you know, just had access to a lot of things, and our home is full of books, like you have in back of you. It looks like yours are color coordinated. But
I'm a weirdo. My brain works visually too. So I actually do associate books with the color of the cover. I know that's odd, but
that's
just the way I am.
Yep. That's good. That's really good. So yes, they grew up with lots and lots of arts and reading, lots of reading. So each of them are uniquely gifted. So
yeah. Yeah, so you have three adult children,
mm-hmm.
and you and your husband live in, do you live in Philadelphia still?
West of Philadelphia, a little town called Westchester.
Okay, got it. That's the town of Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia is almost a character in the memoir. So I wanted to make sure we're talking about the same thing.
Yes.
As I said, I'm in the middle of your novel. Can you see anything now? And it's beautiful. And I didn't just read your other book, A Prayer for Orion. I steeped myself in it. Like I just dunked my head in it and did not come up until I was done. It is an extraordinary book. It's also a remarkably honest and tender and vulnerable book, as it's the very personal story of your son's addiction to heroin. Mm-hmm. In pretty much all ways, Catherine, I feel like this book is a book you probably did not want to write. No one wants to have to go here. So I'm wondering how you decided to chronicle this story in print, because, memoir, as we know, is a kind of a snapshot of a season of a person's life. This isn't your full autobiography. This isn't the beginning or the ending of your family story. It's a very specific snapshot. And I would imagine that I don't know this for sure, but I would imagine that you also toyed with the idea of how about we live this and walk through this, and then I'm not writing about this. Like, I just want this just for me. How did you decide to take such care to write such a beautiful story that is also so, so naked?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another good question. I think in some ways I wrote it so soon after all these things happened that it was fresh in my mind. Mm. And I was basically a writer anyway. And it just seemed like the story that God had given me that honestly felt like the Holy Spirit wanted me to write it.
Wow.
You know, it was all there, all fresh in my mind. And he put us in this incredibly unique situation. And the issues with heroin abuse at that point was just out of control, and it was really speeding up. So I felt it might help. And it might help a lot of parents as well.
Okay. So you wrote this, you say, pretty soon after walking through, your son's name in the book is Sweet Boy, which is what we will call him. And he wasn't very far out of this situation, season, addiction himself, you just said. And often I talk with folks who are wanting to write, thinking about writing about trauma or hard things or beautiful things. And it's so close, they almost can't see clearly enough to write about it. So that's fascinating to me that you decided this is fresh and raw, great time. That sounds like a courageous step.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think too that when I write, oddly, it's almost like I write an arm's length away.
Oh, okay.
It's this sort of thing I'm making, like a sculpture or something. Uh-huh. And it's not, even though I'm writing about all these personal things, it feels a little bit more like I'm disengaged, but also engaged in exactly what's happening. And I'm processing, but not in the story. I know a lot of people process by writing, and that's not necessarily what I do. So that helped.
Okay.
If I went back and read it now, which I haven't, you probably know it's a thing with writing. You don't really want to go back and read your books once they're done because you just cringe and you know, oh, should have changed that sentence. Yeah. So, yeah.
So if you read it now, it'd be interesting to hear I feel like our memory and our story and the remembrance of a thing shifts in the light and with time.
I think it does. I think it does. And I think that's one of the positive things about me writing it immediately, because I still have that anxiety too. You know, whenever you've had a child who's gone through an addiction or heroin overdose or anything like that, at first you're anxious, like, I will never know if this isn't going to, you know, happen again. And then the more time that goes by, you can be a little bit more relaxed. I think it's always going to be in my mind a little bit. It could be, you know, that something else could happen, although more and more, it seems almost like it's impossible that something will go wrong. So, So with that, I think that just writing it right away was super, super helpful. I was able to just almost like overlap with things that were going on.
Yeah. I want to talk about addiction in particular, because you mentioned one of the reasons you would write this book is to help other people, other parents. And you said it's not super common. And also it's so common, right? So many families are dealing with addiction within their homes and within their families and their kids or their parents. And I read this book in a season when I was just confronting that over and over with friends and families. And you write that addiction is a disease with many causes and without a comprehensive cure. And that understanding that there are a lot of causes to this and that there isn't some magic solution, you say understanding that really drains the judgment right out of you. And I wonder if you remember the first time you knew that to be true. You know, you're talking to me from your beautiful Cape Cod home. I don't think, as far as I know, you didn't have other experiences with addiction in your family. Mm-hmm. And you write about how this was an unpeeling of the onion over and over and a lot of disbelief at the first of it. Like, surely this isn't happening to us. Surely not my kid.
Right.
So when did you know for the first time, or when did you start putting language to, there's a lot of stuff going into this, right? A lot of causes, and that the cure is not an easy cure or not comprehensive and not fast. Right. Can you talk us through how you knew that?
Yeah. Right. Well, I think honestly, it's terrible to admit, and I never would have consciously judged anybody else, but I think perhaps when we started parenting, it was still a bit of a sense that if you do all the things right, if you do this, this, and this, that your kid's going to be okay. And so there was this, I don't know that this is still happening, but there was just such a responsibility put on the parents back then.
It is still happening. Yeah.
I was wondering.
That has not shifted. Yeah. No. And maybe the drug of choice isn't heroin. I mean, I live in Iowa. We've had a massive meth issue here.
I've heard that.
Yeah. In Iowa. Mm-hmm. Same idea, though. This undercurrent of if you just do the right things and check these boxes and take your kids to church and have them memorize Awana verses, what will happen is this.
Yes.
You've seen in your own family, what will happen is all three of your children will do this, right? You just have to plug and play. So you found that to be true, that narrative.
Yes. Yes. And my big thing was if we had a strong marriage, that's what my husband walks with the Lord, I walk with the Lord. They see this in the house. They have since day one.
Right.
And yet, there's a secure environment, and that was not the case.
Yeah.
So, the reality is there are an awful lot of other issues that go into abuse, drugs, and, it's a physical thing too.
Right.
It's really true. Some people are predisposed to, drug abuse. So,
you write very compellingly about that in this book, that there's just such a tenderness and a compassion for your reader and for your son, for your daughters, for your husband, and for the lost boys. Can you talk to me a little bit about the lost boys? Because I love how you painted your home. I don't think this was a literary device at all. I think this is how you live, that the doors were wide open. Your house has been a refuge to lots of different kids, including the Lost Boys. Tell us about them.
Oh, gosh, the Lost Boys. Back to the not judging thing, I think this had a lot to do with it. We had so many children into our home, kids, teenagers, who had gotten into drugs. And I think because of my husband's just intense desire to help and mine as well, incredibly naively, we brought kids in and we told them about Jesus, had Bible studies with them. And so that included some of our children's friends who had gotten into drugs and who just were having troubles and things like that. So we really literally opened our doors to them. Right. We had kids sleeping in rooms in our house, And so we'd be talking throughout the night about Christ, about some of their issues. It was just this unique situation. I like to keep in touch with the parents as much as possible, too. Mm-hmm. Just so, we weren't out in this island and they didn't know where their kids were and who knows who these people are. So it was, when you do something like that, you are so forced to walk in the spirit because you don't know what's next. So
to me, that sounds a little overwhelming. We also have a revolving door at our house. But addiction and drug use makes my ears perk in a different way. And did you just decide, listen, this is a safe spot for kids to land, and yeah. just hope that they weren't, I mean, just you were a safe place for them with, but, and did you have fear around that, or how did you feel?
You know what
mom?
It was? It really, it was just so gradual.
Uh-huh. Okay.
A couple kids that hung out, and then they would bring someone over. And we had quite a few kids, friends of Sweet Boys, who had been involved with drugs. And so when they heard about Christ here, when they started to kind of figure things out, then they would bring a friend over and say, you need to talk to my dad, or you need to hang out here. And so, you know, at that point, it's like, well, this is where we're at.
Yeah,
I guess this is where God wants us to be. Mm-hmm. And we are just going to have to push through this and be his voice as much as we can. And as far as it influencing our son, I would say that, you know, there was always this sense that, well, if we hadn't had all these kids, and would he have gotten involved? But yes, he would have. And, you know, for all I know, he influenced them.
Right.
You know, we always, like, if you have kids who aren't doing that well, the first inclination as a mom is to say, well, it wasn't my kid who started it.
Right.
You know? So who knows? It could be your kid that actually handed out the drugs.
Right.
You don't know that.
Right.
So,
gosh. I mean, I think what's so beautiful, I'm sure you've done plenty of armchair quarterbacking and, you know, looking behind you and wondering, I mean, we all do as parents, what did I do? Did I do this wrong? What pivotal moment did I miss that I just kind of skated through?
Yes.
To the outsider, it seems like your home was an oasis and a space where people could hear true things in a loud world, where every time they would step back out into that, it was not, things were not true. In fact, mm-hmm. you write a lot about how addiction or a high tells you lies. It makes you feel a fake love, you write about. And I would imagine that the Lost Boys and others who came through there saw a glimpse of a different kind of thing. You did not turn from them. You did not turn tail when things got messy.
Yeah. And it was messy.
I bet.
You know, acid tends to be, or psychedelics tends to be an issue too with some of these kids, you know, and that one especially is awful because talk about lies, you know, they're seeing some crazy stuff.
Right.
Supernatural kind of stuff. And they're like, well, where is God? Is this, you know?
Right.
So it was just really, really difficult to kind of make heads or tails out of some of it. But
Do you stay in contact with some of those kids? Your kids are older now, but do you still chat with some of the Lost Boys? Yeah.
Yeah, we do. We do. So, and it's sad too, because some of them aren't doing well, but most of them are doing well. And it really is amazing to see their lives right now.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I think a lot about grace. It's been on my mind for, 20 years or so. And you write really beautifully about grace. You mentioned a C.S. Lewis line, that God's grace is a severe grace. It's a severe mercy. Mm-hmm. And you say that there are two parts of this, that the first piece of that severe mercy is that it shows up in that we need help.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second is the actual help. And I think I've thought a lot about that since I read that. Like, this has been months since I finished reading your book. And I'm wondering, as you look at the narrative of your life, where you see that thread of grace. Because if I just read your bio and if I just picked a page out of this book, I could think, oh my goodness, this has felt unfair or unkind, or look at all these potholes and brutal spots that she's endured.
Yeah.
But you make a case that you've seen grace. So can you tell me a few times? Yeah. I'm always on the hunt for this grace in the wild of our life.
You know, I've been thinking recently too about how just surrender, you know, I think that this taught me so much about surrender, and not like, not with a small S, but a huge, like a capital S surrender, meaning that when you are in these situations, you have one choice. Where else are we going to go? You know, but you, Christ, and the whole world could fall apart, but you are my one and only secure place to go. And when things are so bad, I think you're forced to do that. And once you do, you realize that that secure place is secure. It's not, you know, a fake security. It's real. It's true. And no matter what, you know, because I think that when you're going through a difficult time, it is always a matter of what if this happens? You know, what if that happens? What if the worst case happens? And I'm just heartbroken. You know, I can't make that heartbreak go away. But with Christ, that sense that your what if turns into sort of even if the worst happens, I still have Christ. And that is grace, and that there's so much grace and mercy when you do that, because it's, I think that God is drawing you into his arms in a way that not much else can, you know, and the Bible talks so much about, you know, using our suffering to draw us to him. And of course, Christ is the great sufferer for us. So I think the layers of grace that you can experience when you go through something difficult as you cling to God, it's pretty incredible.
Hey everybody, I'm grinning as I say these next words because this announcement has been in the hopper for a very long time. I have a new book, and it's the result of many, many years of wondering and laughing and some crying too. The book is called Star for Jesus and Other Jobs I Quit, Rediscovering the Grace That Sets Us Free. If you are on the hunt for a book that is story-driven and that makes you laugh and cry and wonder again at what grace actually looks like in real life, this is the book for you. Head to my website, KimberlyStewart.com, for all the details. Thank you for being my people. I am ever in your debt and will absolutely perform an interpretive dance in your honor when we see each other next. And now, back to the conversation. One of my favorite things about your writing is how you write about faith. Oftentimes in my reading experience, folks write about faith, particularly many years growing up. I just avoided all books about Christianity in particular because the tendency is for folks to do it in a way that's tidy and neat and saccharine, a little sugary. Right. So I saw my experience with Jesus in your pages, because my experience with Jesus hasn't been sugary or saccharine. It's been true and profound, but also very perplexing sometimes and even frustrating. And I think that I've learned a different angle of that as a parent. My guess is you have too. My experiences with my children sometimes are incredibly vexing. I have my experience with faith and with God. And I often think, oh, I hope, you know, I don't mean to, but I think about my three kids and think, oh, I hope they have just a seamless experience with him. And that they just know what I know without having to walk where I've walked. And so you say there are a couple barriers when it comes to the fixing of our kids. The first one we have to cross is like a speed bump. We have to come to peace with the idea that fixing them is beyond us.
Yeah.
And then the second speed bump is understanding that it's actually a really good thing that fixing them is beyond us. Mm-hmm. I love this. I think it's both terrifying and freeing. I think it's true to its bones. Mm-hmm. So my first question is, how's that going? Does it get easier with practice? And how did that shift anything in you once you figured that out? Change the way you treat your kids to know they're not fixable? And oh my gosh, thank God it's out of my realm. I mean, you've already talked about surrender. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that what this is? Well, first of all, it just gets transferred to your grandkids.
Okay. Good to know.
So I'm like, sweet boy, you need to do everything right, and those kids are going to turn out great. So,
and does he look at you with a slow blink and says, "Are you sure?"
I know better. You know better. We both know better.
Oh, that's good to know that you forget lessons as well. This isn't like a one time. You know it forever. Okay, so you're doing this to your grandkids. Good, good.
But I know the template. I know the blueprint. I know how it works now in a way that I did not know before. And that is a beautiful way that it works. And it is best to trust God, you know, trust and obey, because there's no other way to be happy in Jesus. I mean, that's such a song that you can take in a saccharine way, right?
Yeah, totally.
It's kind of like, I've come to believe that a lot of it is just fake it till you make it. You know, I should sing that song over and over, as silly as I think it is.
Right. Maybe my heart will agree with me. Yeah.
And so it is, you know, I think that it, you do have to, I think you just have to hold on to what's true. It's like scripture. You have to hold on to what's true and what God's taught you in the past. And you know, it's a daily surrender. We hear this about so many things, and parenting especially, you know, I think parenting is, it's unique in that it mirrors God with us. Mm-hmm. We are his children and we disobey him, you know, and he's a perfect parent.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, it is. You're right. It's complicated, but it is just the perfect, perfect teaching for him to teach us things.
Yeah. You mentioned chatting with Sweet Boy now about his own children, his own parenting. How did that work when you were writing this book, his involvement with it? Because it was fresh for you, but it was fresh for him. Uh-huh. So to me, it seems like that would have been kind of a collaborative process. It's definitely your story, but he is a main player, as is your husband and your daughters. So how does that work? Lots of folks ask about that piece of it. Like, how do I involve the people who are on the page or not?
Yeah. With memoir, you know, I'm trying to stay as close as I can to truth. That is very important. I don't want to just kind of go off on my own thing. I can definitely, I'm on the page everywhere because it is my perspective. And at the same time, I did ask him before I wrote it if it would be okay. So I wanted to be perfectly honest. And I also asked many of the Lost Boys who hung out here. Mm-hmm. So I sent them copies of the
you
book
did.
Or copies of wherever I mentioned them. Mm-hmm. And then I asked Sweet Boy if he'd like to vet it, which he did. And interestingly, Sweet Boy was being Sweet Boy. And he came to me afterwards and said, Mom, I'm so sorry I did this to you.
Aww.
So I think it was even healing a little bit, but it was hard for him to read. I think he might have put it down before he finished it. My husband can't read it to this day.
He can't.
No, he can't. So, and I think that's wise, just because of who he is, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
like, he lived it once. He doesn't need to revisit.
Right. Wow. Right. Exactly.
It's a, that is a kindness, I think, that you have not just allowed for those different expressions and different interpretations and even interactions with your story. That's a really beautiful thing. I think we learned that the longer we're married, that our shared experiences are only kind of shared, you know, because we see these things so differently. So I think it's, you know, that's amazing. You've won awards for this book and he's not going to read it. He lived it. That was enough. That was enough. Okay. I have a couple more questions. First, I would love for you, Catherine James, to talk to me about prayer. I know you have not written a book about prayer. I don't need 10 steps to my best. And I don't think you would be any interested at all in writing that kind of book, but prayer is all over your writing. All the things I've read from you. And I would guess you wrote about it, but I know you have prayed a lot. What do you know about prayer that you didn't 15 years ago?
Right, right. Well, first of all, you know, once you do surrender, you realize that there's nothing you can do or else you're going to go. Well, that's the only place to go. And you know, that's the only place to go. And then also, I think that the more you pray, the more you see God answer those prayers. It only kind of gives you more, you know, desire to pray and need prayer, knowing that that is really going to, you know, that that's where God does act. And I don't understand that, because can he act without me praying? Right? There's 1,000 questions to ask there before whatever reason he tells us to, and he answers when we pray. And, you know, we always hear, well, not always as we want him to answer, but he does. And in the end, it's all good.
Mm.
And, you know, God was so gracious to give us certain situations that really were quite miraculous, nothing short of true miracles, you know.
Right.
So that just, you know, caused us to pray even more. And it's a matter of just seeing God act, and, you know, and that more prayer leads to more prayer.
Mm. Cyclical situation that you see him act, so you ask for more. So you see him act, so you ask for more.
Exactly.
Actually sounds a lot like parenting, by the way. Okay. I have a final note here. This last sentence on page 208, I told you I wouldn't quote you to you, and I lied. This is what you write. I've discovered that when the murmur of angst begins doing its thing, which it can still do, turning my body parts to wax, it helps to remind myself of that platitude that no one else is allowed to say to me. and trust God. You do not, see, that was a beautiful sentence. You do not seem like a platitude person. Kate, I've just met you, but so what do you say to folks who love addicts or are warring with addiction in their own homes? That's not a platitude, because you've said that those words, trust God, have implanted deep. They have roots, but you had to learn that. So what do you say? Just bring this to a really, I would love to hear, just practically speaking, my friends who are dealing with this right now. What do you say to them? And then what do you say to me as a person who loves them?
Right, right. Oh, goodness gracious. That's a, well, I could write a book about it.
I bet you could. I bet you could. You have one that's actually really beautiful, but yeah, and I'm sure you've heard a lot of things that weren't helpful. So if that helps to go from that angle,
the worst,
how can we
the
help
worst,
each other?
I mean, the worst situation is somebody coming up and telling you about their own kids. And I did this, you know, sort of underhanded bragging that parents can sometimes do. You know, he filled out, you know, 5 applications for college. He got into 4 and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm. That's really, it's tempting when you have a successful kid to do that. And I would say just be careful who you share that with, because sometimes the pain of some of these parents that they're going through, and it just kind of adds salt to the wounds. And so as far as what to say, you know, I would say that, first of all, asking if you can pray for them, and even praying with them, depending on the situation at hand and whether it's appropriate. Definitely sharing about my own trials through this whole thing. I think that that's been extremely encouraging. In fact, you know, since I wrote this book, I have had so many parents come to us and just talk and open up, and they needed it so much. And just to hear our story, that we did experience these really awful things, but truly, truly, you know, you hear this, people say this, but I'm glad I went through it. That's insane.
It is totally insane.
Yeah. And I don't want it to ever happen again.
Yeah. Right. Both are true.
Yeah. But it is, I think, incredibly encouraging for other people to realize that, you know, you've been through it yourself. And if you haven't been through it, you can still encourage people. You can tell them that you care. You can, we have plenty of people in our church who had never gone through anything like this. And you knew which ones weren't judging you. You knew which ones really had just this tender spot for you, and that they were in pain with you. You just knew. And so that was just incredibly encouraging, you know, to have other people praying and who you really knew were helpful. And so, you know, and back to the trusting God, you don't want to just kind of come out and say that, but work it into things, and not in a platitude way, but in a, you know, I don't think I'd come out and say surrender. I think that I would just share my story, because that's all I can do. I turn out differently for other people as far as how God teaches them to trust. But being told to trust God is just one more thing to do. I'm not trusting God enough, so my kid isn't changing enough. You know, even if you say pray more, then you have the same sort of effect.
You say you knew which folks were on your team and just loved you regardless. Can you think of anything in particular that was the tell for that? How did you know?
Well, it was mostly when people were trying to fix the situation. Uh-huh. You know, if they were handing us different rehabs and things, there was a place for that. For sure, if they had, you know, understanding of that sort of thing and rehabs. But at the same point, it was best when they didn't try to fix and didn't try to in any way control. Because I think that some people do have a tendency to want to control things. Of course, we do in our own lives, but even other people that you might not even know that well. You hear about something they're going through, and you sort of in your mind, you're going, click, 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 there's a way. I'm going to land on that, and I'm going to tell them what to do, and we're going to fix it. So I think that can be pretty hard to hear from other people. So it's the people who come to you, you know, like I said, and just sit with you. And, you know, when I was in the hospital with Sweet Boy, my husband and I were, I've just never thought I would be in a situation like that, where he's, you know, on the brink of death, literally, and wasn't expected to live. And we just, that room, our little waiting area for people who are put when they might have their loved one die. And we knew that's where we were, and the tissue boxes were everywhere for a reason and all that. And it just got so crowded with people. I just remember one of my friends, she was coming up and just, she was weeping, you know. And we just hugged and, you know, they let me cry. And I didn't care. It's not coming down my face. It didn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a, what a gift that she gave and you gave to her, that there, that she didn't let silly things stop her from showing up. I think I do that. I think lots of us do that. We go through a litany of, well, I haven't seen her for a while. I haven't even checked in. I haven't asked about Sweet Boy for months.
Yeah.
Who am I to come to that room?
No.
And I think we lose out when we don't put that litany to aside. We'll deal with that later and go in the moment.
Absolutely. We mourn with those who mourn, and there's so much comfort in that. And just knowing other people have that kind of heart that they would mourn for me, with me. It's just, you know, and, it, you know, oddly, it just even made it more profound because her kids are kind of perfect. And that she just came and hugged me and she was weeping because I was, you know.
What a beautiful story. And may we all, may we do that. That's what we're supposed to do. Joyfully supposed to. No should. Just, gosh, we get to. I'd like to ask you what you're working on now. Because you are a writer's writer, and every writer nerd bone in my body wants you to write more books. So are you?
I am writing a book. And yeah, I'm actually in over my head, 100% in over my head.
Perfect. Great things happen there.
You know, the Great American Novel.
Easy.
She's a mute girl growing up in the Vietnam era. She has an uncle who is in Vietnam, and he actually does something sort of atrocious. He's a war photographer, and then his guilt is just kind of crushes him. And oddly, they end up together sailing in Mexico.
Okay.
And
right. Okay.
So I'd learn a lot about the Vietnam War.
Yes.
It is fascinating. It's really fascinating.
I don't think you're in over your head. I think exactly you're exactly where you need to
be. Oh, yeah. Try writing a character that's mute. Yeah, that's in over my head.
Yeah, that sounds horrible. You're going to do great. It's up for you. You are totally up to this task. Not me. Okay. Final question that I love to ask all of the people, most of the people who come on this show, and you are the girl for this question. As a fellow book lover, I think you are one of those. Two questions. First, a book that you've recommended over and over over the years that you just, even after all these years, you love to recommend. It can be absolutely anything about anything. And then is there a book that you can't wait to read?
One of my favorite books is White Noise by Don DeLillo.
It's okay. I have not read it.
Short book. It's terribly funny.
Okay.
It's not a Christian book.
Yeah, well, oftentimes the terribly funny ones aren't, in my experience.
It's a book about death. So, yeah, that's where I go to. I go to a book about death that's not a Christian book. So, yeah.
Awesome. But okay, I'm totally reading it.
Okay, right.
No, I am. That sounds fantastic. I'm putting it on the list.
It's great.
Okay, White Noise by Don DeLillo.
Yes. And then With Christ in the School of Prayer. By Andrew Murray.
Okay.
100%. Yes.
Okay. Christ in the School of Prayer, Andrew Murray.
Andrew Murray. Yes. So good. So good. He's like, he's on cloud. He's like with you know, St. John out there writing. It's
wow. Beautiful. Do you have, I mean, I hate to press my luck. Do you have anything that you're looking forward to reading? Maybe this summer or something on the list that you think, I can't wait for that one.
Yeah. Probably I love Michael Chabon's books. And so, The Mysteries of Pittsburgh, okay. I believe.
Oh, set in your neck of the woods then.
Yes. And it was published a long time ago, but I've heard it's funny. I like his other books. So.
Okay. Yes. I've read two of his and I love both.
Yeah. He's a good writer. So.
Okay, great. So this is fiction and fiction and fiction. Fantastic. Okay, those were very fulfilling. I feel like we got a little master class on what you read when you're a really great writer in your free time. Okay. And I would like to also add that for those of our listeners who are not watching on YouTube, there are post-it notes all along Catherine's walls, another version of what it looks like to write a book in real time. What does that one say?
This one says kidneys, spleens, and other mysterious organs.
That is so fantastic. You're seeing how this sausage is made, everybody. That's awesome. Oh, Catherine, thank you so much for joining us. This has been total delight. Thank you for writing beautiful, beautiful words, some of them so hard wrought. They're just gifts to me and to your readers. So thank you so much.
Sure thing. Thanks, Kimberly.
I have so much respect and gratitude for a writer who was willing to plumb the depths and to do it with honesty and grace and lush, unflinching prose. It's harder than it looks, and Catherine makes it look so easy. Catherine's A Prayer for Orion is that kind of book, just stunning. I felt like that book gave me a new lens for the world, and a closer understanding of both friends who battle addiction and the families that battle it alongside them. I'm so grateful for Catherine's wise voice in this space. Please make sure to share this episode with the people in your world who will gather courage from it. And while you're into the sharing mode, please also share the love by reviewing this podcast. A quick word and a passel of stars from you makes our lives infinitely better. Easiest gift ever. That's it for today. Thanks so much for joining me. I can't wait to be with you again soon. For real.